Ms. Watson, Mr. Merritt, are you all ready to proceed? Our clerk will call the second case.
The court will now call the state of Texas and Greg Abbott in his official capacity as Attorney General of the state of Texas versus Valerie Saxon Incorporated and Valerie Saxon individually. May it please the court, Susan Watson will argue for appellants, cross appellants, the state of Texas and Greg Abbott in his official capacity as Attorney General of the state of Texas. Mr. Martin Merritt will argue for the appellees, cross appellants, Valerie Saxon Incorporated and Valerie Saxon.
You may proceed.
I would like to begin by going through just a brief procedural history of the case. The state of Texas, via the Consumer Protection Division of the Attorney General's Office, sued Ms. Saxon and Valerie Saxon, Inc., her company, on August 29, 2011, for violations of the Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act and the Texas Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, DTPA and FDCA, respectively. Both of those statutes declare unlawful, false or misleading, or deceptive trade practices. Chief among the state's complaints are that Saxon unlawfully offers for sale dietary supplement products that contains labeling or advertising that the products can cure, treat, mitigate, or prevent disease. Such claims cannot lawfully be made for dietary supplement products. Claims like that can only be made for drugs that have been approved by the FDA. Some of the examples that were shown in the state's petition is a dietary supplement product called CLA. And in regard to that product, Ms. Saxon says that CLA has shown to have anti-cancer properties, especially in inhibiting breast and prostate tumors. Dr. Val's JC360 Graviola can help the body fight inferior cells, making it a great addition to any cancer program. It could also be used for fever or influenza. Another product, Dr. Val's Oh My Back, she says can help you live a pain-free life while improving mobility and flexibility. In response to these claims that were brought against Ms. Saxon, Ms. Saxon eventually filed a counterclaim against the state in which she joined Attorney General Greg Abbott in his official capacity. My role in this suit is to defend against the counterclaims. We are now appealing the trial court's denial of the plea to the jurisdiction as to Saxon's free exercise of religion claims only. We request that the court reverse the denial of the state's plea on those claims.
Okay, let's get to some questions
here. Sure.
Common sense tells us that if the state of Texas sues someone, they should be then subject to affirmative defenses and probably counterclaims that address the state's original suit outside of possibility of being poured out from immunity, right?
Right.
You say on page 24 of your brief, Saxon's free exercise claim is not properly defensive to the state suit and in fact goes so far beyond the scope of the state's claim that if the court is to consider the claim, Saxon must demonstrate independent subject matter jurisdiction. It seems to me that the thrust of her defense, which is partially, I think, declaratory judgment, is
right,
that I'm not culpable under the suit you've brought against me because I'm exercising my free speech and free right to religion constitutional rights.
Right.
So how is that not defensive to their suit and they should not be subject to immunity?
Well, there were affirmative defenses that were listed in the answer and counterclaim, but there were also counterclaims that were brought. And the counterclaims joining Greg Abbott in his official capacity were designed to proactively seek relief, declaratory relief,
but they are
from the state.
Defensive in nature in the sense that if, as I understood it, the declaratory judgments were granted, they would defeat your suit. Hence, they're defensive in nature, and then they wouldn't have any other effect but to defeat your suit. So what's the difference between asserting an affirmative defense under rule, whatever it is, 94,
right,
versus asking for a declaratory judgment, which does the same thing?
Well, it's the difference, essentially, between the affirmative defense and the counterclaim is the relief requested.
Okay.
An affirmative defense certainly would be proper, and that we're not arguing here today. But what they have come done is in their counterclaim, requested that the court make a declaration through the UDJA that her rights have been violated by the application of this suit and the inspections, really, that were done against that identified the violations that Ms. Saxian had conducted while selling these dietary supplements. And because she's seeking that declaratory relief, that affirmative relief, that is in fact a counterclaim against the state.
I'm totally agreeing with you.
I think the case that you're talking about, the Riata case, was mentioned in our brief. And that's the case that said, well, when the state does in fact bring a suit, it essentially waives immunity to the claims that offset the state's claims.
But you tried to say it was money, and I'm saying I can see circumstances where it doesn't necessarily have to be money.
Well, the holding of that case was rather limited, and it did, in fact, talk about money. And all of the cases since then focuses on money damages. Essentially, when the state brings suit as a private citizen, so in Riata and its progeny, when the state brings a tort claim or a breach of contract claim, they're essentially acting as an ordinary citizen, as you and me, bringing a suit. But here, the state has brought suit in its power as a sovereign, under essentially its police power. And for that reason, it's not acting as a private litigant. And so the claims that were brought against it are not what Riata contemplated as properly germane or defensive to the state's claims.
I don't see why. Okay, go ahead. I interrupted your argument.
No problem. No, it is. But Riata was a very limited holding regarding certain claims, again, where the state is not acting in its police power.
It just seems to me that common sense says anything that they do defensively to your suit, they should be able to do that without facing immunity. They would not have filed a declaratory judgment action on their own, absent your suit. Whereas they might have sued you for money on their own, having nothing to do with your claim, but these things here are strictly reacting defensively to your suit and would not have been brought elsewise, it seems to me.
Well, it seems that they could have been brought under the threat of suit. We did, in fact, notify them of the violations, and we sent them a letter, a DTPA notice letter, basically saying that, look, we do believe that you are in violation of these statutes and that there are civil penalties that will be involved should you continue this behavior. At that point, she could have then brought suit. Her whole defense seems to be that she is so afraid of the civil penalties, she is therefore silenced and unable to speak her claims, her religious beliefs.
We're going into the mirror.
Sure.
The merits are way beyond this.
Sure.
So it just seems to me that anything they do defensively is okay. But
my argument is that a counterclaim is not defensive and that it could have been brought nevertheless.
Okay.
But really, in regard to the claims that have been brought, it is the state's position that each of them are jurisdictionally barred. There are three free exercise claims that were articulated. One under the U.S. Constitution, and that claim is barred because neither the state nor person in his official capacity, Greg Abbott in his official capacity, are persons for 1983 pursuant to Will v. Michigan. So that claim fails. Also, the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was also pled, fails as a matter of law because the federal RFRA does not apply to the states as held in City of Bernie v. Flores. That leaves us with the final remaining free exercise claim, which is under the Texas Constitution. That claim fails because in order for the state to retain immunity, which we do believe we have in this case, the counter plaintiff must articulate a viable constitutional claim. That she has not done. Saxian's chief complaint is that really, there are three elements to it. That one, that Saxian was a member of the Christian religion. Two, that she was called upon by God to preach the benefits of dietary supplements. And three, that the state, through its suit, has interfered with that religious practice. But the threshold inquiry in a free exercise claim under the Texas Constitution, and likewise the federal constitution, is there a substantial burden on the person's practice of religion? We assert there's not. Not only has she not pled any facts that would demonstrate a substantial burden other than her conclusory assertion, it's clear from the state's petition that the state is only complaining of very specific statements made in regard to the dietary supplement products that she sells. The state doesn't seek to silence the general message that dietary supplements are somehow beneficial. In fact, Ms. Saxian herself has admitted in an affidavit that when she ministered on TV or in person, this is a quote from her affidavit, any reference to any ingredients that may be found in dietary supplement or food product was always referenced by the ingredient's common or scientific name and never in the mentioning or promotion of a specific brand. For example, if I spoke of vitamin C, I called it vitamin C, which is readily available for purchase in multitudes of stores and countless websites. That does not violate the law. Saxian's demonstrated her ability to operate within the confines of the law. Thank you.
Mr. Merritt?
As you can tell from arguments of counsel, we need the court's assistance in helping us resolve this case. We can't do it by ourselves.
Have you tried? Have y'all sat down and tried to work something out?
We have had mediation before.
Okay. All right, good.
We just see it too far in too many different directions. The case involves a collision between FDCA law, which is already under attack on free speech grounds in the U.S. Supreme Court, as is outlined in the brief, and the constitutional rights of a religious broadcaster on the world's largest Christian television network to express her religious views as she sees fit. The state says that it is illegal for her to do so in any manner because she also happens to sell a line of vitamins that makes it a speaker-based and content-based restriction. Any person can say anything they want about the value of CLA, publish reports, and they can be true, but if you also sell a line of vitamins under the state's version of the FDCA law, you can't do it. But Ms. Saxian doesn't only say that these vitamins have value. She says that God put these substances in the earth for the use of mankind. Where there is a collision between the FDCA law and the First Amendment, then the Religious Freedom Restoration Act says that the religious freedom wins. Tilton v. Marshall, however, says that where the question is a fraud or misrepresentation statement about a religious representation, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act does not go far enough. There cannot be a trial over whether or not what she says is true because it is beyond the courts to inquire the veracity of religious tenets. How central what she says is to a religious tenet is also beyond the scope of judicial concern. So that's why we ask for the declaratory judgment, because we don't believe there can be a trial under Tilton v. Marshall over whether or not what she says is true or false. We'd ask for a declaratory judgment in order that we don't have to have the trial, because we believe, as a matter of law, this trial cannot take place. And that's as far as I think I need to go. There's so much in the merits that we could go into, but I don't think I get that far, so I'll give my time back. Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Yes.
My understanding of this case is that what you're seeking to do in the big picture is not prohibit this individual from saying God placed vitamins and minerals on the earth for the use of man and it's good for man to take them. You're attempting to prevent the individual from saying that buy my vitamin B12 because it prevents cancer or cures cancer. Is that the thrust of what you're trying to do?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. Okay. Yes, the state's chief complaint, again, are these specific statements that could be very misleading to the public when statements are made such as, well, you know, vitamin C can I say vitamin C, any particular dietary supplement can alleviate pain or arthritis or symptoms or ailments or disease of any kind that could potentially be harmful to the public. And what they are doing through an affirmative defense, again, would be acceptable. But what my opposing counsel is trying to do is cease this trial altogether and saying that there's no way that the state can prosecute Ms. Saxian for these claims because of her religious beliefs. And while I do understand that there are some appropriate affirmative defenses, the state should be able to go forward on its claims under the Texas Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and DTPA, laws that have withstood First Amendment challenges for years. This court has held that the interest behind them is compelling. In mother and unborn baby care versus the state, this court held that the interest behind the DTPA is a compelling interest and would overcome such challenges. The issue here is, and I understand there's a potential Riata problem, as you had mentioned, but in that case, again, the gist of it was that in order for a counterclaim or any claim to survive when the state has brought suit, it must offset. This declaratory relief does not offset. By saying that we cannot have a trial at all, that doesn't offset. When you talk about offset, you talk about monetary damages. That's not what we're looking for here. We're looking to protect the public by enforcing consumer protection statutes. And that we should be able to do. And because there has been no free exercise claim articulated, the immunity stands. There is no jurisdiction. There is no substantial burden. That's all I have.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Now, are y'all done, or is there some more cross?
We do have a cross appeal, and we have arranged for time to address those. Okay. Thank you.
Ready? Mr. Merritt?
Quite simply, we filed a affirmative defense and summary judgment on two grounds. Both of them were denied. Immunity from suit under the holding in Tilton v. Marshall, because the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is insufficient as a matter of law, where the allegation sounds in fraud. So if any part of the state's case would involve questioning whether or not her religious briefs are in fact truthful or misleading, you can't have the case at all. You can't have a trial at all. The Tilton v. Marshall, the Texas Supreme Court says that the trial itself is a violation of my client's constitutional rights.
So let's stop for a minute. Let's suppose that an individual says, God made poppies, poppies made opiates, heroin comes from opiates. Therefore, because they're God's vitamins, minerals, and plants, I want you to buy some heroin from me. Is it your position that, well, that's freedom of speech and freedom of religious exercise, and you, as you just told us, you can't even go there?
I believe there are cases holding that if it is a part of a sincere religious belief that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act prevails, U.S. Supreme Court cases on illegal drugs. I think the courts can question whether or not that is a religious tenet, and I'm not sure exactly to the extent of it, but there are cases that talk about illegal drugs. Here, unlike most Religious Freedom Restoration cases, we're not talking about conduct, we're talking about misrepresentation. If what she says is true, then she can't be sued under the Deceptive Trade Practices Act. So the question is whether or not her belief and her expression of belief, which has also not been proven to be false, they just say that she can't prove it's true, that God knew what he was doing when he put nutrients in the earth, and she sells vitamins that are not covered by the DEA or an illegal substance. She's suing. She's selling ordinary vitamins that anyone can sell. There's no allegation that what she sells is illegal. There's no allegation that anyone else can't talk in the exact same manner that she speaks. In fact, if a physician wished to say the exact same thing she says and sell vitamins, there is a physician privilege that allows him to do that, whereas she can't. That's what makes it a content-based and a speaker-based restriction. It identifies one set of speaker and says, you may not speak because you are a class of person. You have a financial motive in addition to your other motives, and the other people can speak as long as they don't have any financial motive in speaking, and that's the Thompson, the Western States case. But I digress. The no evidence motion was on the Central Hudson test. We sent Rule 194 requests for disclosure for the state to tell us what their theories were as regarding our constitutional affirmative defenses, and they didn't answer anything about the Constitution. So our argument was the court should have granted a no evidence summary judgment motion on the four factors of the Central Hudson test, because it is on the burden is on the state to meet the Central Hudson test. It never shifts to the defendant where the state is trying to silence someone by prior restraint. And it is not true that they simply wanted to address what she's saying on the label. They handed her, which is tab 7 in the red brief, the appellee's brief, maybe it's the blue brief, tab 7, the injunction that they handed her that said, let me make sure I'm correct on this.
7 is the state's first submitted responses.
Let's see.
You looking for an injunction?
Yes.
Tab 6, maybe.
Six. So I'm clear for the record. That is 6 of the brief of cross appellants. And it lists for you exactly what they were trying to stop her from doing, what she can't say. And when they filed this lawsuit, they went to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and said, reason we filed this suit is because she's saying outrageous things on TV that can't be proven. That's why that's in the record. And in the brief, it's not just about what she's saying on the label or in her pamphlets. They wanted to get her off TV, and they did. She got fired because of what they said to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. No longer needing that going forward into the future, now they have the luxury of saying, oh, we're really talking about a much narrower thing because she's not on TV anymore.
Well,
but that's
which of these things could an individual do legally under 5?
I'm sorry, if I understand your question.
Yes.
In the injunction?
Page 4 of 10.
I'm sorry, one of them's upside down in mine.
All right.
Okay.
From the next page, 4 of 10. Can I do any of these things as an individual, or are they all not legal?
Well, again, there are inquiries, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to be evasive in your question, but these are conclusions that require a finding of whether or not what she has said about the product.
About her. I didn't ask about
okay.
her. Let's ask about me. Can I do these things, or are these all prohibited items?
If you are an individual, and the facts support a conclusion that you have delivered misbranded drugs, then it is illegal.
So it sounds like what you want to do is allow one individual to do these things that another individual can't do by putting religious context or something into it.
Correct. Under a fair reading of FDCA law, anything a person says anywhere, any place could be evidence of an intent as to how the substance, even water, is to be used. What she might say on TV or in a person's private home, as long as she also sells that substance, could be evidence of intent. Therefore, even if she's doing it as a religious message, that message could be restricted by, under this interpretation of the misbranding provisions, by a strict application of the law.
Well, are you telling us that an individual should be able to do, let's pick out A. A, if they put it under the guise of religion?
Yes. If it substantially interferes with her religious expression and religious beliefs. For example, in the Bible, Luke talks about using anointing oil. If you're sick, use anointing oil and it'll raise you up.
I can understand if she should say, I believe that this misbranded drug is beneficial. Okay, that's fine. But when you start to sell it to others, that seems to me a different That's going past expressing your religious views.
It is a little bit more, what makes it misbranded is a little bit more intricate than simply this is misbranded. It depends on what she has to say about it. And if what she has to say about it is not false, they can't stop her from saying it. So that's a question that comes.
She said they weren't all allowed to challenge the falsity of what she was saying.
I'm sorry, in general, Central Hudson, if it's a commercial speech, they have to first show that it's false, what she said. But now if she's saying God wants you to take it to make you better, then you could never prove it's false. So you can't ever get past the first step of the Central Hudson.
Did you ever hear of a radio station called XERF?
No, ma'am.
They used to sell bread. And if you used it the way they told you to, God would talk to you while you ate that bread, and the bread would never, ever be used up. And that was under the guise of Christian religion. So you're saying that that could never be challenged.
That may be one of the instances where you don't need to rely upon anything other than observation to realize that it's not true. Whereas what Ms. Saxon is saying is that God put these nutrients on earth, and studies show that they have benefits.
That's fine too, until you start selling them. I mean, freedom of religion, to me, this whole concept means that I can practice my religion and do whatever I want to and express my beliefs and believe anything I want to.
Certainly.
So you start selling them to somebody else, relying on your representation.
Right.
Is that the big... I'm kind of shocked that y'all haven't been able to work something out here. Is the gulf between you what you think she wants to do and the... under this wording, is that the problem?
She would probably, I think we're on safe ground saying that my client would probably not have a problem with some of the wording. She has more of a problem with the injunction that says she can't say anything about her products.
I don't think that anybody has a problem with she says, I believe God put these on earth, and I believe they can cure cancer. If she believes that, that's fine. But if she starts to sell them to somebody and says, these drugs, these vitamins cure cancer, I think that's what their problem is, not her personal belief, which is fine, whatever it may be.
My understanding is, I'm not sure she says that vitamins cure cancer that have been shown to be beneficial. For example, selenium, which there are studies, but they're not such scientific certainty that you can get FDA approval of selenium, which is like sulfur.
Okay, well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
More time, okay.
Just a couple of moments to respond. Yes, you're absolutely correct, Justice McCoy. That is what the injunction we're seeking would say. Probably the impasse that we came to in negotiations is that I believe that there was an insistence that some language be included to address the free exercise of religion, and that the state would no longer suppress the religion by whatever means. Really, that's where we had a problem with, because the state's petition does in no way affect Ms. Saxon's religious practices. And so I think that that was part of the problem in the dialogue there. In regard to the cross appeal, again, Mr. Merritt brought up the Tilton v. Marshall case. And the one notable holding from that case is that the freedom to believe is absolute, but the freedom of conduct is not. And so, you know, the freedom of conduct, particularly with regard to consumer protection statutes, has always been regulated, really, for society's sake. It's particularly true when we're dealing with false or misleading speech. Initially, it's our position that there's really no appellate jurisdiction over the cross claim, because under the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, section 54.014, a party may only bring an interlocutory appeal on a summary judgment if they're a member of the electronic or print media and acting in such capacity.
You kept talking about that meant that they delivered the news.
Yes. The courts have construed that to be traditional news media. Think Fox News. Think CNN. Think your daily newspaper. And this court, in fact, in Kaufman versus the Islamic Society of Arlington, set forth factors to determine whether or not someone's actually a member of the media. Those factors weren't met here. So it's our initial position that there is no jurisdiction. However, should the court find jurisdiction over that claim, the First Amendment, free speech, is simply not implicated here. Because again, this court has held in mother and unborn baby care that the DTPA in particular prohibits false and misleading speech but does not further encompass protected speech. As a matter of law, the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act and DTPA only prohibit false and misleading speech which is not protected by the First Amendment. Consistent with the holding of Central Hudson, in fact, which states that commercial speech is entitled to protection so long as it's not false or misleading. The statutes that here address false or misleading speech, so there just is no First Amendment free speech claim implicated. Likewise, commercial speech that doesn't concern a lawful activity is also not protected by the First Amendment. There's a very similar case, State Board of Medical Examiners versus Brzezinski, in which a doctor invented an unorthodox treatment for cancer. And it wasn't approved by the FDA, but he made promotions in furtherance of this new drug that he had created. And the Austin Court of Appeals applied the Central Hudson test and determined that the advertisements relating to that new drug violated the Texas Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act's false advertising provision. And because it violated that provision, there was no lawful activity. The statements didn't concern a lawful activity. And because the statements didn't concern a lawful activity, the doctor didn't have standing to bring a First Amendment claim. I think that's pretty similar to what we're dealing with here. There simply is no First Amendment free speech claim implicated. Again, these laws are neutral and of general applicability, and they're presumptively constitutional. And we generally denied all of the counterclaims that were brought, and we included that in our Rule 194 disclosures, and we do believe that that was sufficient to rebut the claims. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Thank you, Mr. Merritt. Your case is submitted. You are free to go about your business, and we are going to take a brief recess before our 3 o'clock docket.